One more thing. Season 1, episode 10.
This is episode 10?
One more thing. Season 1, episode 9. Take 2.
Welcome to One More Thing with Jay and Robert.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Robert. One More Thing is a podcast celebrating LGBTQ plus pop culture. Recorded live in Jay's living room.
Happy Monday, everybody.
This week is a very special episode.
It is?
Yeah, not like an actually special episode, but like a very, capital V, very, capital S special, capital E episode. Like on like a Disney Channel show, you know? Like, okay, let me explain myself.
Yeah, what's happening?
You know, it would be like on like Family Ties or something they would do. Like, you know that, okay, hold on. I'm Googling very special episode. Very special episode is an advertising originally used in American television promos to refer to an episode of a sitcom or drama series which deals with a difficult or controversial social issue.
Oh my god, what?
Definitely yes.
I didn't know about this.
Yeah, it's like the network wanted to find a way to warn viewers that the upcoming episode would be about a serious issue without directly putting a parental advisory. Arthur had a 9/11 episode that was a very special episode.
Arthur, like the aardvark? They had a 9/11 episode?
They had a 9/11 episode.
Arthur was on in 9/11?
They had a Hurricane Sandy episode.
What?
Where they dealt with a storm and Idina Menzel played a therapist.
No, this is wrong. Idina Menzel was never on Arthur. Wow, this is a whole world of television that I didn't know existed.
Yeah, I can't believe you don't know about this. Let's see if I can find a picture of Idina Menzel and Arthur.
Does she have cheekbones? Oh my god. Know that it is simply Idina Menzel with ears.
I mean, she's literally wearing her costume from If Then. But she has ears. We'll include this in our newsletter.
Oh no, go to our Instagram
to see
One More Thing.
Where one Anna more
will
thang.
Be One More Thing, where Anna will be posting this picture of Idina Menzel on Arthur.
Menzel in a Mondays.
The very special E episode.
Oh, that's perfect. Menzel Mondays.
Oh, God. Can we have Menzel Mondays? Can that be forever?
Welcome to Menzel Monday. Did you watch Boy Meets World?
Yeah, every episode.
Okay, so here's a very special episode called, I don't know what it's called, but Sean has a friend who is physically abused by her dad, so Sean and Corey decide to hide her at Corey's house overnight. Oh my God. Uh-huh. It ends with the kids' help phone hotline number.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, what are we talking about today, Robert?
We're going to be talking about body issues today. Which cool. is a deep topic. So, and we've never really covered a deep topic like this where it's been the whole episode. We've had a lot of episodes that are fun, and then for like 4 minutes, we'll cover something deep. But we've never had an episode that is that. So bear with us. We're going to make it as fun as possible. And we have a great game at the end. So stay tuned, and we'll be back after this.
No offense, Dr. Paula, but I know how to breathe. I've been doing it for 9 years.
I know. You seem like an old pro. I'm teaching you how to breathe when you feel afraid. I bet you didn't know that sometimes I sing. And every time before I perform, I'm a mess. This fear climbs inside of me and takes over like a bully inside my head. Focusing on your breath is one way to stand up to the bullying fear.
We will not really be covering trans issues in this episode.
We thought about it, but then I felt like there's such a focus on, like, trans people's bodies anyway in the media that I don't really want to contribute to that. And also, we, like, don't know about that.
Yeah. So, as you know, this is a podcast about pop culture, and as the episodes are progressing, we're really trying to find all of the things that really encompass pop culture. While body image is not necessarily a outlet for pop culture, we think that it's a big part of pop culture and is a big influence in everyone's thinking. And
pop culture is like the number one factor in the way people view their bodies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we're really so we're going to be diving into that and everything that we think that means. Warning out right now, we may be talking about some stuff that is triggering, but we would be remiss to not cover some of the stuff that we're gonna talk about today.
So just listen to this episode with care.
Yeah, because we care about you.
Oh. So the big thing that I want to say about lesbian body issues is that lesbian body issues, for the most part, are the body issues that all women have because of, you know, the patriarchy. And most lesbians have, like, the same issues with their body that women at large do with their
bodies. So you mean lesbians and women are the same thing?
Yeah.
Whoa.
But, so, separate from those, which could, like, obviously be a whole podcast of their own, which I assume there are many podcasts about, you know, yeah, women's body issues. And we'll plug some in the newsletter. So aside from those issues, the subsection of the lesbian community that has really sort of like an image issue is the butch community. Mm-hmm. Because lesbians in the media are like 99% white and femme. And then when there are butch lesbians or even like butch women in the media, they're always like predators or the butt of the joke or just like a one-off thing that you never see again. Like the ones that I can really think of.
All I think of is Rosie O'Donnell and Ellen, but I wouldn't even say Ellen is necessarily all that butch.
Yeah, I'm talking about, like, characters.
Oh, okay.
Because, like, Rosie O'Donnell is great, but
Rosie's almost her own subsection of, you know, lesbianism.
The ones that I could think of off the top of my head when I was writing this episode were Lea Delaria's character on Orange is the New Black, who is aggressively a sexual predator, essentially. One of her plot lines is, like, her and Nikki, who is the other, like, vaguely butch lesbian, competing for how many women they can have sex with.
Yeah, right? I mean, I guess you can argue that it's that because of the environment that they're in, but then even in the flashbacks, when you see her before she's in prison, she's still, like, just trying to pick up women at bars.
Exactly.
Aggressively.
What the fuck? Why are you picking all the peaches?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yes, you do. Hoskowitz. I've been trying to get bumper to bumper with that for a month, and now she feels used and doesn't want to sleep around because you got there first. You knew I was after that.
What can I say? Not everyone wants a diesel dyke.
Lay off my marks. Seriously. Enough with the clitterference.
Another example is a character on Pretty Little Liars, which I do not watch, but several of my friends do. So, hi, Megan and James, start listening now. a character who they told me about named Paige, who's played by Lindsay Shaw from Ned's Declassified School Survival Guide.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Moe's.
Wow.
Yeah, so her character is like a quote-unquote butch lesbian, but she really is just like an athlete who like wears a lot of flannel. And like there's another lesbian on the show and the two of them like date on and off. And the other lesbian is just kind of like there. And then Paige, who is like the butch one, they're always like, look at that lesbian, like she's a lesbian, and it's like very awkward, and she like, she's evil, she like kills some people, she like pushes Emily down a flight of stairs. Yeah, Megan and James told me mostly bad things about her.
How'd it go with Coach?
Not only am I not closing out the relay, she's not letting me swim in the county meet.
What? Why?
Because I got a C on my trig test, which pushed my average below a B.
How is knowing cosines gonna help you with your backstroke?
I knew I should have taken wood chop.
So there are those two, which are kind of like examples of the way that the media usually portrays them. But then there are two that I thought of that are like really good portrayals, which are Rhea Butcher, who is an actual lesbian stand-up comedian who is on the show Take My Wife with her actual wife, Cameron Esposito. And she is butch and Cameron is like masculine of center, and they're just like normal people, and they're not like, or they're not like predatory or anything. I know, move past it. I don't know what that noise was. Move past it. But that's because it's like written and directed by them, and so they have like control over the storyline. And then the other example of like someone who has control over the storyline is Lena Waithe, who is a writer and star of Master of None, the Netflix show.
Oh yeah.
Who is a butch lesbian in life and is a butch lesbian on the show. And
she's on the show?
Yeah.
Who's she play?
Her character's name is Denise. She's just like friends with
the season. I didn't get that far on the show.
And she, this season, had a really exciting episode that everyone is like freaking out about a little bit, where it takes place on Thanksgiving from 1995 to 2017, and it kind of traces her like journey to being comfortable with her sexuality and her family's journey with being comfortable with her sexuality. It kind of traces her arc. She just like has girlfriends and like goes through a coming out journey, and it's never like a whole thing of her being butch. It's just like the way she is. Similarly to Here It Comes, Alison Bechdel in Fun Home, Tony Award winning best musical, she realizes that she's a lesbian, and also she is butch, and it's never like a thing about her like becoming butch and becoming like lascivious. So anyway, those are media portrayals of butch women that I could think of. But
well, that one sounds good.
Yeah, that one's great.
Is it season one or two?
Season two.
Oh, there are two. Cool.
Yeah, it just came out a couple weeks ago.
I only got to the family episode with his parents,
which is, I believe, the second episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think this is going to be a lovely Thanksgiving, Denise.
Yeah, I think so.
And I like Michelle.
I like her too.
I'm happy for you.
All these media portrayals that are not written, because Fun Home, Take My Wife, and Master of None are all written by actual lesbians and actual butch lesbians, mm-hmm. which is why these portrayals work so well, mm-hmm. is because they're like taking their experience and they're the ones sharing it, which, I mean, I feel like the message of this podcast is and always has been like, when you tell your own story, it's good. So
right, what do you know?
Take that to the bank.
Ryan Murphy, we're talking to you.
The reason that it kind of like that butch women are so hated in the media is because they're also like hated in real life also, in the way of like, and here's where the episode starts getting serious, butch women are told, and even just like masculine of center women are told all the time that we are not actually women. And like, I am not, I don't identify as butch. I identify as like soft butch, mm-hmm. and like masculine of center, but I still have had experiences where people have kicked me out of the women's bathroom. In fact, just 1 week ago tomorrow, I was kicked out of a women's bathroom.
Yep. So what happened?
I was at a major off-Broadway theater that I will not name that has...
Well, you can name it. We can boing it.
That's true.
We haven't boinged in a while.
That's true. I was at... which just... this season got gender-neutral bathrooms.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but they used to have a men's room and a women's room.
Okay.
And they still indicate, like, this bathroom is stalls and this bathroom is urinals.
Is it gender-neutral in that it's a singular bathroom, or is it gender-neutral in that this is our normal bathroom that is now...
This is our normal bathroom that is now gender neutral. Okay. And it's like, we have two bathrooms. One has stalls, one has urinals and stalls. Uh-huh. You can decide whichever one you want.
Okay.
And so it has a sign that says... please use the bathroom that most accurately, like, meets your gender identity or expression, mm-hmm. which I hate when it says gender identity or expression, because then it's like, well, then I should use the men's room, even though I don't identify as a man. Like, I express my gender in a masculine way. Like, I'm wearing men's clothing, so I should go to the men's room.
Their vocab's off.
Yeah.
Maybe they should listen to the vocab episode of our podcast.
Season 1, episode 5. Episode 4? Whatever.
You went to the bathroom.
Right, but because they are, like, stalls and urinals, all of the women still wait for the one with the stalls. I always wait in that line because, like, as someone who is a masculine of center woman, it is really hard to decide which one to use in a situation like that, so mm-hmm. I always just wait in the women's room because I don't, like, want to start anything. Mm-hmm. And so I was like waiting in line for the women's room, and the line was like really, really long. And the line, there was no line for the like quote unquote men's room. We like got up into the bathroom, and the three women behind me had been like complaining about how long the line was. And they were like, all those people want gender neutral bathrooms, and now like it makes the line so much longer. And I was like, no, it doesn't. This line is the same length it always has been.
Yeah.
And like people want to like use whatever bathroom they want, so they want to come into our room, so like why can't we go into the men's room? And I was like, well, you can, that's the point. Like, and I was not saying anything because, again, like, I don't want to start shit. But then these old women who had been behind me, one of them like tapped me on the shoulder, and I was like, ave. So I turned around, and this like old like Doris looking woman was like, oh, you people want to use our bathroom? And I was like, and I just like tried to turn back around because, again, don't want to start shit, because the bathroom is the last place I want to start shit, because I had to pee.
Yeah.
And she was like, and also I hadn't peed all day.
The last place you want to start shit.
Hey, I also hadn't peed all day, so keep in mind this was when my bladder was full. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, I drink like 4 of this water bottle mm-hmm. in an hour. I was like, oh, and I just like tried to turn around, and she was like, this bathroom isn't for you. And I was like, okay. And I just like tried to turn back around. And she was like, go use the other one. If you want to use whatever bathroom you want, go use the other one. And I was like, I'm going to use this one. And she was like, you're supposed to use the bathroom that aligns with your sex, right? And I was like, yeah,
yep.
that's right. And therefore, here I am and here I will remain. She was like, so get out of our bathroom. And I was like, She had like her two little friends with her and they were all wearing like gross sweaters. And they were like, I mean, listen, it was 80 degrees and they were wearing sweaters. I was annoyed. And they were like, yeah, get out of our bathroom. And I was like, I'm just like trying to use the bathroom. I'm just gonna like, and they were like, oh, so now you get to use our bathroom, but we can't use yours. And I just like turned around and didn't say anything. And then they started like yelling at me about like going into the other bathroom. And let me just quickly point out, there were like 20 other people in this line. And did anyone say anything? Certainly not. So eventually I was just like, fuck it, whatever. And I like went into the other bathroom and used the other one. And like joke's on them because there was no line. So right. I got to use it real fast. But when I walked in, the like men who were in that bathroom were just like, hey, and I just like walked in. Once again, being told like I don't belong in like a space for women, you know?
Uh-huh.
And like that is one example that happened to me last week that like happens pretty often. Like it happens a lot.
Hmm.
And I mean, like, for people who are more butch than I am, it happens constantly, yeah. You know? Women-only spaces are meant to be, like, safe spaces, but they're not safe for butch women.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that was what you and I talked about a little bit with the Wonder Woman, like, women-only screening thing, where you were like,
right.
Are you gonna go to this? And I was like, no, because they don't want me there. Like, it's for what they can, it's for like quote unquote women, which means like femme women.
Yeah.
It's not for me. And it's not for anyone who is like more butch than I am. It's for.
So question about that. When you say for, are you saying that as it is being thrown for like feminine women? Or are you saying that the audience that goes is not the audience that will want you there?
The second one. I'm okay. Saying that it is a screening for women.
Mm-hmm.
And what 90% of the world thinks of as women
mm-hmm.
does not include me.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the thing of, I'm in a couple of lesbian-only Facebook groups
mm-hmm.
that are like secret groups that are just like to complain. And there's a lot of conversation recently, actually, about like how every single person in that group who is at all anything other than femme has at some point in their life been like, am I a woman?
Gotcha.
Even if the final decision is like, yes, I definitely am, and I still am gonna use she, and like, I very much mm-hmm. identify as a woman. Like, every single person who is not femme and is assigned female at birth has the thought of like, oh, can I really be a woman? Is that really what I am? Or like, am I a trans man? Am I non-binary? And it's because we are told that, like, womanhood equals femininity. And a problem that I kind of have along those lines is with these, like, Twitter campaigns that you see all the time that are like, let Disney princesses be warriors. Like, let's show people that, like, being girly does mean you can be badass. And I'm like, awesome. That's great. But in equal measure, let's also show girls that if you are masculine, you can still be a princess. You don't have to be a prince. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
Like, gotcha. You can still be a princess. You can still be, like, beautiful. You can still be girly. I was always like, oh, I want to be the prince.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I want to wear, like, a fancy suit.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, like, a really hard time with that. And I think that a lot of, like, young lesbians would have less trouble with, like, accepting their sexuality and accepting themselves if it was, like, cool and like, acceptable and, like, pretty for, like, a princess to be wearing a suit.
Right, yeah.
Because, like, there's a lot of push in the direction of, like, let female soldiers wear skirts or, like, let Mulan be femme.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish there was, like, I love that, but I also wish there was, in equal measure, like, the opposite thing of, like, let Cinderella be in a suit.
Got it.
You didn't notice her at first, but I saw her the moment she walked in. She was a delivery woman. She came in with a handcart full of packages. She was an old school butch.
Someone just came in the door, like no one I ever saw before. I feel came from. I wish I did. I feel so dumb. I feel your swagger and your bearing and just right clothes you're wearing, your short hair and your dungarees and your lace-up boots and your keys.
So one of the big things with body issues with gay men is this sense of, like, muscle culture. And you know what? Since it's Pride Month, we can talk about why I hate Pride events. A lot of Pride events are on rooftops with 700 gay guys in Speedos, which, I mean, is a dream of mine, but makes me feel like I can't go. Here's Jay to talk about muscle culture.
So the AIDS crisis in New York City and San Francisco, where there was a heavy gay population and still is a heavy gay population, it was very common to go to gay clubs or gay events or gay spaces and see people who were at various stages of infection sort of, like, for lack of a better word, wasting away. Mm-hmm. Because for those of you who don't know, AIDS is an autoimmune disease where you are unable to fight infection, and so you get a disease that could be small for someone else, and it runs its course without being fought at all. So every disease makes you very, very weak and on the verge of death. But even before people knew a lot about AIDS, gay men would have it, and you would go to gay clubs and just see all of these, like, sort of skeletal gay men on the dance floor. At the beginning, that was a sign that they had, like, the disease mm-hmm. that no one knew. And then eventually it was a sign that they had AIDS and therefore were not someone that you wanted to have sex with.
Mm-hmm.
Because people didn't want to get AIDS.
And then this thing developed where...
This is around the time when muscle culture developed, because it became sort of like a sign of, like, oh, I'm healthy, I don't have any sort of disease. Look at me, like, I'm this buff guy who can still lift weights and still, like, build body muscle and body fat. And this is when sort of, like, veiny muscles mm-hmm. became a thing, because that was a sign of, like, look how hard I can push my body and, like, I don't get sick.
There's actually an episode of Queer as Folk where one of the HIV-positive characters, his T-cell counts start getting really low, so he starts going to the gym all the time, and it becomes this big episode arc where he gets addicted to steroids and he pushes his body, like, way too far.
Oh my.
Even though at the end of the day he was still healthy, or as healthy as he could possibly be at that point. But his, like, he went crazy because his mentality was, I need to be as muscular as possible. And, like, every scene that he was in started off with someone being like, oh my god, like, you look great. And his boyfriend was just kind of like, oh, this is, like, weird. What's happening? And never really realized what was going on. Anyway.
And so that's something that kind of has stuck around to today.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, gay men trying to get super buff.
There's a weird line because it's like, of course, I am incredibly attracted to buff men. But I think that there's a line between attraction and acceptance. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Must be something I ate. Or the steroids.
We already had that conversation.
It's fucking you up.
It is not fucking you
up. Yeah, it is, and you don't even know it. Christ, you even hit Brian.
I did not hit him.
Well, shoved him, made him bleed, whatever. But you can't just go around shoving people and acting all crazy.
Oh, no, I'm crazy. Yeah, fuck you.
You're not crazy. Just sometimes you act that way.
You don't understand anything.
Understand what?
What's like to wake up every morning and remember, oh yeah, I've got this thing, because you don't have this thing.
I also don't want to harp on muscle culture for too long, because another big part of gay body issues is the whole, like, fat feminization situation that's going on, like, social media, where gay men will be like, I'll date anybody as long as you're not fat, femme, or Asian. Which ties back to that the ideal gay man is a masculine, white...
In shape.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I'll never turn down, but, like, I also think that that shouldn't be the model for the gay community. That, yeah. Like, that is all you should be and all you can be.
Yeah.
And if you are not that, then you do not exist to the gay culture. In that, which I think is weird, because it's kind of parallel to what we were talking about earlier with, like, butch femme, but at the same time, it's very different.
Yeah.
Because the lesbian community is not, like, if you're not femme, then you're not a lesbian. But the two things...
The thing that I was talking about comes from outside the community. and the thing that you're talking about comes
is coming from inside the community. Yes. Which I think is really interesting. And actually, all of the research that I did do for this episode, everything compares itself to the lesbian community. And it's like, this is what's happening in the gay community. But, like, this is what it's like for the lesbian community, and we don't know why. So let's jump right into my favorite topic, eating disorders. So I went to the Eating Disorder Institute to pull some numbers, because one of the...
Is that a website or a place?
It's a website that you can find in our newsletter.
You went to, like,
yeah, some sort of museum. Oh, yeah, no. I actually went to the Institute.
Oh, awesome. And,
no, go to tinyletter.com/onemorething, and you will find links to the Institute. So eating disorders are a giant part of the gay community, and people are calling it the secret epidemic because no one really talks about it. I mean, people don't really talk about eating disorders in general, which...
Especially for men.
Yeah, because men are taught to, at a very young age, not talk about their feelings or anything that's going on with them, which we will get to. But just thinking about that, like, gay men represent 5% of the male population. The scary thing is that 42% of men that have eating disorders are gay.
Whoa.
So there are a lot of different kinds of kind of eating disorder situations going on in the gay community. One of the biggest ones is just called coming out, which, I mean, original name. It's like the coming out eating disorder.
Gotcha.
But it's not like an official title. It's just kind of what people refer to it as. And it's just that, like, when people come out, they feel like they have to look like a masculine, muscular man for fear of rejection, so that people can be like, I'm gay, but, like, look at me. And maybe that will deflect from the fact that I'm gay.
Yeah.
In communities where it might not be acceptable for someone to be gay. It sucks, but it's, like, the way that most gay men do that is through eating disorders, which the Institute says can be brought on by a couple of things. One of the first ones is experiences of violence, and which is basically, like, gay bashing and discrimination and, like, being bullied can trigger some kind of PTSD that will trigger an eating disorder of some kind, which I think is really interesting. Because I did not know.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
That those two things could be related. Also, and this is so sad. So, as we all know, the LGBT community makes up a large population of the homeless community. And that 42% of homeless youth are LGBT identified. But the scary part is that 33% of LGBT youths have some form of eating disorder. And it's mainly because they come from homeless shelters where maybe they weren't being fed all the time, or homes where they weren't being fed all the time, or in the care of, like, social services, and have experienced, like, some kind of violent assault when they came out. But coming out of that, body image is something that, like, haunts the gay community in a scary way. So, like, coming out eating disorders is a thing which I had in high school. A lot of people that know me know that I was anorexic for most of junior year. No, sorry, most of senior year. And that literally, if it wasn't for my best friend's mom, I don't know what would have happened. Without harping and turning this into a big thing about me, the scary part is that I didn't know that I was anorexic until after. And that basically everyone took care of me through it without telling me, because growing up in a relatively conservative neighborhood in Maryland, no one is like, male anorexia and, like, male body dysmorphia exists. But I, like, have vivid memories of, like, being at lunch and just not being hungry and not knowing why and not realizing that, like, I was deciding to not be hungry. I just wasn't hungry. And then my best friend would just be like, my mom gave me an extra sandwich. Do you want it? And I'd be like, well, yes, because my body was like, you need the food. Like, one sandwich, like, is fine. And I would do that. And that's how it was through all of senior year. She would just have extra things. And then it wasn't until about a year ago that I found out that, or, like, her mom confessed to me and was like, I knew something was going on, but I was too afraid to, like, do anything and say anything because I, like, it's a really touchy subject. So I, like, did this and, like, packed all of this, these, like, extra lunches and things for you so that, and she never told my best friend either. She was like, I just knew that that's what would happen. Like, that if I gave her extra food, she would give it to you. And then I have vivid memories of, like, being in their house and her going grocery shopping and being like, Robert, like, do you want anything for me to have in the house that, like, you'll like? So I would be like, oh, yeah, sure. Like, I eat these things. And then she'd get them and make them while I was there so that I would eat. But I was completely blind to it. That's
shocking.
Yeah, it was honestly the moment when when she told me, we were all just sitting together, and I don't remember how it came up, but the topic came up and she told me, and I just started crying, and my friend was like, wait, what? And was like, she was like, I didn't know you were anorexic, and I didn't know my mom knew, and this whole thing was done through me. But I also remember, like,
in the movie of that, your friend's mom was played by Laura Linney.
Oh, she'd love God. That. She would love
You're
that.
So right.
Talking about body dysmorphia, I remember like convincing my mom to only buy me shirts that were a size small, even though I was not. And then I would take them and I don't know how to describe this, but like I would, like, you know, when you put on a shirt, you put like your arms through first.
Mm-hmm.
I would put my head through and keep my arms in, and then like push the shirt out from the inside and kind of like force myself to stretch it out so that it fit, so that like in my mind I was fitting into a size small.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
Like everyone that saw that I was wearing a size small was like, oh my god, you're wearing a small size small, or even though I probably have made it like a medium or a large no matter what I was. And it wasn't until like my sophomore year of college, like a year before I moved to New York, when I looked back at pictures of myself in high school and was like, oh, I didn't realize I was that skinny. And you look at me and there are pictures that are not available on Facebook anymore where like my arm is like this thin around and no one said anything. I would sit down for dinner and my mom would constantly be like, you're not allowed up until you eat. But there was never a conversation of like, maybe something's wrong, because as men, you are literally taught that like saying something or expressing your feeling in any kind of way or telling someone about what you're going through is, for lack of a better word, effeminate.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you do that, then you are no longer masculine. So like that put up against coming out is so much to go through mentally.
Yeah.
That a lot of people can't handle it. So I think I was really lucky with not even realizing that was what was going on, even though it was pretty dangerous for me to not know. Like, I think that it worked out for me that, like, I was able to come out of it. But gay men are generally afraid of being associated with femininity,
mm-hmm.
in themselves or their partners, which is where the whole no fats, no femmes, no Asians thing kind of mixes back into this. And I'll admit, like, for a while, like, right after I came out, I was afraid of dating anyone that was more feminine than I was. The hard part about me talking about mental health issues is that I was, air quotes, able to overcome my issues without talking to anybody. I, for lack of a better phrase, didn't need another person to come and help me through it. But if someone would have been there for me to talk to or go to and kind of be like, this is what I'm feeling, I may have not had those issues for as long as I did. I feel like when someone comes to you and is like, oh, I'm seeing my therapist, there's this weird air in the conversation. Well, like when you're talking to like a normal, like not a normal person, but just like an everyday average Joe on the street, there's like an air of like, oh, you need a therapist. Know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I, for a long time, was afraid of. Like admitting to myself that like I do need a therapist.
I think there is a culture, especially among gay men, of refusing to need help in any way with anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that leads to a lot of gay men letting issues go untreated that very easily could be treated,
mm-hmm.
just by having someone in therapy. Which is not to say that this isn't a gay men only thing. I think that people who are not gay men also...
Well, that's the interesting thing, is like part of the research that I did with the Institute, me and all of the professionals that I talked to at the Institute.
You and your fellow scientists, the Google.
is that they were like, the one thing that they kept running into is that when they looked at men and eating disorders, they were like, okay, great, this is the information we've gotten. And then they were like, wow, so much of it is from the gay community. And then when they looked at women and eating disorders, they were like, okay, great, this is the information we've gotten from this. And the information that they got from the lesbian community was just what the women were going through,
yeah.
which we touched on earlier,
yeah.
where like lesbian issues are women's issues with eating disorders. I see the smirk in your face just
No,
rising,
I'm not smirking.
Thinking about Hillary Clinton standing on the platform.
That is what I was thinking about. I wasn't smirking.
Yeah. But they were like, oh, it's interesting that like those two things are so similar. And yet, with the male population with eating disorders, they're so segregated. That lesbians who have eating disorders, their eating disorders, or disorders of or body image disorders of any kind, are typically from being a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Where in the male population, those eating disorders are coming from the community. And from just, like, being a gay person. And they were like, we don't know how that connects in one community, but not in the other one. Then there was a big paragraph about the patriarchy.
Yes.
That, like, quickly followed it. Which I'm not gonna talk about because, listeners, you just know what that says.
Yeah.
It says one of the number one ways to tackle asking for help in the gay community is kind of, like, dismantling the masculinity of it.
Mm-hmm.
And being that, like, asking for help is not something that is feminine. It is something that is just asking for help. And that asking for help can mean many things. It can mean turning to like a paternal figure and being like, this is what's going on with me and I need help. Or it could be getting a therapist.
Yeah.
And being like, these are my issues and I need help with them. Or anywhere in between in that area, but not once is gender brought up in it. I mean, it all goes back to the
men
don't cry. Like,
yeah, of like, if you ask for help or admit any sort of weakness, you are wrong and bad.
Suck it up, like that
yeah.
whole. Yeah. Which is, sadly, what I'd say 90% of men go through, maybe more.
Mm-hmm.
At least when they're at a young age.
Yeah.
Because I feel like as progressive as a society as we claim to be, we haven't really found how to communicate that to children yet. Like, I think we're starting to. Like, there's glimpses of like, oh, this is happening in a school. And it's like, but I think that we as a society have kind of figured out a way to combat things with adults.
Mm-hmm.
and like young adults, but we haven't really figured out how to pass that on to children so that like the future generations like don't have these issues or don't have to be brought up that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think it started, but I think that that is one way to kind of take down that issue.
Yeah. Yeah, to teach kids that, like, it's okay, no matter what your gender is, it's okay to say, like, I'm struggling and I need help.
Yeah.
And to teach kids that, like, therapy works.
The other way is that it's interesting. Oh, it's interesting. So Jay gave me a book for Christmas and I've been reading it. And one of this,
me.
And chapter one, there are a whole bunch of gay guys in
What's
bar.
What's the book, Robert?
Dancer from the Dance by
Andrew Hollerin.
There are multiple paragraphs about like all of the things that you should pass a gay guy for. And it's like, if his dick's too small, if he can't kiss, if his eyes aren't blue enough, if his shoulders aren't broad enough, and like all of these things. And they really put down all of these gay guys. And I was reading it and I was like, God, I'm like exhausted.
Yeah.
But the Institute was like, if gay guys would stop putting each other down, more people would feel okay admitting that they have some kind of issue, whatever the issue really is. And it doesn't really even need to pertain to eating disorders necessarily, but some kind of body image, something. Oh, I literally took this quote from the website because I thought that it was great. It says, what we should be doing is creating an environment where people can be attractive in different ways. We should be building each other up, celebrating our differences, and taking a critical eye to some of the attributes we hold to be positive, like gaunt features, bulging muscles, like jawlines for days, stuff like that. Because I feel like everything that's wrong with the gay community can be brought down to body image. And that's what I have to say.
I'm gonna challenge you on that.
Okay.
I think everything that's wrong with the gay community can be brought down to physical appearance.
Yes.
Because I think you're leaving racism out of that.
Oh, 100%. One of my least favorite scenes in all of our favorite TV show, How to Get Away with Murder, is when, what's his name? Jack Fallahy is hooking up with the guy, and for plot reasons, he's hooking up with him for a different reason. He's basically having a one-night stand, and the one-night stand guy is kind of like, oh, like, what's your number? We should go out sometime. And Jack's like, no, like, I'm good, for plot reasons. But he's like, no, I'm good. And the guy is kind of, like, trying to get some kind of conversation out of him. And he goes, God, you're the problem with the gay community. And Jack turns around and is like, we're all the problem with the gay community. And I texted him, I was like, wrong. I am not the problem with the gay community. Speak for yourself.
How is that related?
Because we were talking about problems with the gay community, and Anna said talk about pop culture.
I said tie it back.
Hey,
Hey, I don't know if you have plans, but we could grab a bite. There's a great sushi place downstairs, actually.
What are you doing?
I'm sorry?
This was sex, not a date.
Wow. Okay. You know, you're much nicer on Humper.
It's because I wanted to get laid.
You know what? You're the problem with the gay community. You know, we all just treat each other like a piece of meat.
We're all the problem with the gay community. It's nice meeting you.
Speaking of gay men and physical appearance, if you're tired of only seeing fit white gay men on stage, might I recommend that tomorrow evening, June 13th, you head over to Ars Nova, if you're in New York, 511 West 54th Street, and you go see a play called Interrobang, written by Rai Zilong, directed by Bryn Herdrick, and everything else by me. Because it's a play about gay Asian men.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
What do they do?
It's about a young gay Asian man coming to terms with his sexuality and his Asianness.
Huh. I like that.
I'm glad. Come to Ars Nova tomorrow night, 511 West 54th Street.
Huh.
At 7 p.m. Robert.
What?
What time is it?
It's time for the game.
You don't have to be hostile to me.
No, I'm just making sure I got it this time.
Congratulations.
Also, no, listeners, it's 1:50.
You should say, it's time for one more thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we never say that it's called
one more thing. It's time for one more thing. Oh, I forget the lyrics. We had a theme song.
You had a theme song.
It was like, one more thing, it's time for one more thing. You know what it's time for? It's time for one more thing.
Yeah, I'm such an open with this.
God, what was it? I can't remember, but it's time for one more thing with Jay and Robert.
Our game this week is not at all related to the content of the episode because the content of the episode is heavy and we want the game to be light.
Yeah, that's awful.
And we want to recover a little bit. So this week our game is inspired by the Lupita Nyong'o situation and the Viola Davis situation. And we... That Done. Didn't make any sense. The Lupita Nyong'o Rihanna movie and the Cate Blanchett Viola Davis movie that have both, like, gone viral on the internet recently.
I don't know what that is.
And then I'll just cut all this. I don't feel like explaining. This week we wrote and cast our ideal queer movies.
I'm so excited to hear what yours is because you've written so much more than I did.
All right, you go first.
Close your eyes. Because I want you to imagine it. And I'll close my eyes for yours and it'll be fun. So we're sitting at IFC.
Oh.
To see.
We're in the movie.
A movie about a flower shop.
I've seen the movie.
Owned by Stanley Tucci. And he falls in love with Jeff Goldblum.
No!
What do you think? That's
wow.
it. That's all I've written down.
Wow.
But just the two of them in a flower shop. Very i.e.
Imagine
in,
me and
in
you.
In looking. Oh. When Dom's trying to, like, start his restaurant, and then he has that, like, friend who owns the flower shop, like, very like that. But a lot of the scenes take place in a flower shop.
Wow.
Right? Also, wouldn't they just be a really great couple?
Yeah. They'd be a great couple.
Okay, what's yours?
Okay. So I've written a full blurb for mine.
Okay.
So close your eyes.
Okay.
Emily, Haley Steinfeld.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
Is about to graduate high school, and she's still a virgin. Her best friend, Sarah, Amanda Stenberg... wants nothing more than to help her lose it, preferably to star quarterback and Sarah's twin brother, Sam.
Okay.
Giovanna Depo.
Who's that?
The guy from The Leftovers and Fences.
Oh, God, okay.
There's just one problem.
Mm-hmm.
The girls don't know that Sam is in love with chess club president George Hayden Zito.
Okay, who's that?
The boy from Edge of 17.
Oh, I loved him.
When Sam confides this in Emily, she promises to keep his secret as long as he keeps one of hers. She's starting to think that her feelings for Sarah are more than platonic. Also starring Marissa Tomei.
God. As literally who?
As Emily's mom.
Okay. As long as she's not, like, the principal. Joan Cusack would be a good principal in that.
Joan Cusack as the principal. Great, love it. Bobby Cannavale as Emily's dad. Jacob Tremblay as Emily's brother. And then as Sarah and Sam's parents, Queen Latifah and Andre Holland.
I'm not responding to that. Wait, who's Andre?
Andre Holland.
He's the guy from Moonlight. American Horror Story and Moonlight.
Which one?
Kevin from Moonlight. And in American Horror Story, he was Lily's husband.
That's Is that it? Movie. Can I open my eyes?
Yeah.
Those are really good movies. I think we should start a film festival.
Yeah, we should. If you are a filmmaker, please contact us.
Originally, it was going to be Sarah Hyland instead of Hailee Steinfeld because she was so good in Dirty Dancing. But then I decided it had to be Hailee Steinfeld because she was so good in Edge of 17.
I can't believe it's just the cast of Edge of 17.
I know. I also watched Edge of 17 last night when I was writing this, so...
Special thanks to Sarah Kleist for the microphone and Stephanie Hawkins for the pictures.
And Scott Holmes for the music.
And our lovely producer, Anna Verde. How was it sitting through your first episode?
Great.
Now the
took so many notes.
The curtain has now been lifted and you see what really happens.
The curtain has fallen.
That's true. The curtain fell.
The iron curtain has fallen. Congratulations to us.
Thank you to, on a deeper note, everyone that did help me through my eating situation.
We are going to put a list of resources and helplines in the description of this episode in our newsletter.
Our newsletter, which you can find at tinylitter.com/onemorething.
And you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at One More Thang with an A because I was taken. You can follow us on Facebook at One More Thing Podcast. You can email us at onemorethingpodcast@gmail.com.
Blow us up. Email's the new texting.
One is the number one.
Yeah.
You can follow us on
Podbean if you don't have
Podbean.
Apple products. But I will say, if you have an Apple product in your hand right now, leave us a review on iTunes.
Yeah.
You know why? Because it boosts my ego.
It boosts our ego. It boosts our listeners. Please.
And I'm tracking them, so.
Also, okay, so picture it. You're one of our friends. You're sitting at home or on the train or wherever you are, listening to our podcast, and you think, great episode, I should text Jay about it. Or great episode, I should text Robert about it. Great impulse, but instead of opening your phone to text us, open your phone to Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or iTunes.
MailChimp.
And instead, make your love public.
Mm-hmm.
And tweet your thoughts on the episode instead of texting us, or post them on Facebook, or
really,
comment them on Beyonce's Instagram.
Honestly,
do whatever you
if
want.
You, oh God, if you, if you love the podcast as much as you claim to, tell everybody else about it.
Yeah,
I challenge every listener to get one person that they know to listen to the podcast.
Yeah, and if you do,
we'll have a listener of the week. That'd be fun.
Okay, yeah, listener of the week this week is Anna.
Oh my god!
Congratulations.
No, me!
If you want to be our listener of the week...
The person that blows us up on social media the most will be the listener of the week, so...
It's just going to be Price Walden every week.
Or Stephanie.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Try and beat Price Walden or Stephanie Phoebus in terms of boosting us on social media.
Ready, set, go!
Okay, end of That's episode.
Have a nice life. Goodbye. That was beautiful. You did such a good job of expressing yourself.
Lesbians.
And then I'll put a sound effect.
What's a lesbian sound effect?
Just like a truck driving through.
A clip of Cherry Jones talking.